I'm Carrie Provost, and you're listening to Going Steady,
a podcast about exploring places in the land of steady habits and beyond.
We were supposed to be at a winery.
Yes, that was the initial plan. That didn't work out.
So we are sitting in a car.
In a park.
In Colt Park in Hartford.
Covered with snow.
Very much not a winery, but I bet we could knock on some other cars here and get some hooch if we wanted it.
Or goodness knows what else.
January, and it looks like January finally.
Yeah, it's snowy, it's cold, it's bleak.
And you said you were in Weathersfield and
I got caught in a freak hailstorm.
So, New England, full of surprises.
Yeah, so I feel like winter is always that balance between going outside so you don't go crazy and stay inside and feel really unhealthy versus like trying to be cozy and at least take advantage of the winter vibes. Actually wrote a blog post about things to do in winter, and it all basically comes down to that sort of contrast of, you know, get outside and explore and walk in the snow. And some people would say, you know, cross-country ski. Well, that's not me, but I will go out for a walk in the snow. And that's why you see a lot of articles about like restaurants with fireplaces and cozy hotels and then also a lot of like ice skating. I think everyone is essentially like trying to strike that balance.
Yeah, and I think there is something to be said for taking long walks in the winter and freezing your butt off and then going into one of those cozy restaurants.
Yeah.
So we just came from brunch at the Republic in Hartford, which it's a pretty cozy place.
It's really pretty inside.
It feels like where you retreat in the winter, so that was a good choice.
Yeah.
But now we're back in a car.
Now we're in a car.
You know, I haven't done any snowshoeing yet this year because the snow hasn't been that much, or it hasn't felt like snowshoeing snow.
I haven't done any snowshoeing ever.
It's hard. It's a workout. No one tells you that. It looks like, oh, this is just a fun thing to do. I've done it during a blizzard, and I snowshoed to Whiskey Club. I didn't die, but I don't know that I would repeat that.
That's a glowing review of the activity. I didn't die. 4 stars. Would not die again.
What snowshoeing is good for is if you have very steep surfaces that are like maybe concrete and typically hard to get onto. So it's an interesting thing to try. So if you ever want to do that, I've got access to some snowshoes. I went to, I think, 3 Hanukkah parties.
Did you? That's cool.
It was insane.
Like, I just lit my candles alone.
I don't know how 3 of them happened. I don't normally have any, and it was just, like, running into people. So they ran the gamut from, like, a children's party, which was cute, even though I was the only person there that was a grown-up who didn't have a kid. So it was, like, a little awkward, but I got
to cut
donuts in half for people and try to not freak out about the amount of germs that the kids were covered in. And then, like, to a friend's Hanukkah party that involved, I don't want to call it a talent show, but showcasing our talents.
That's weird. I went to a Hanukkah thing that had a sort of a talent portion in it, too. Is that, like,
Is it a thing? I don't know. I my talents are not, like, I'm a talented person, but not in a party way. So it's hard to demonstrate.
You can't, like, write at a party.
No. I mean, it's just too much pressure. But there was someone who did some comedy, and I should have just gone with my gut to do some comedy, because I would have been on his level. And then last episode I was talking about seeing a coyote up at the Cap landfill, and I went back up there a few weeks ago and saw the coyote again.
Okay.
And a bald eagle. I did not get pictures of either because I get really excited when I see rare to me wildlife and I just get blurs.
Once I was walking down the street in New London and some guy started excitedly talking to me, and I was like, you know, I just like got that immediate like city don't talk to me kind of thing, and he was just trying to point out to me that there was an eagle, and then I felt really bad. And the same thing happened to me a different time with a different guy, and he was trying to point out a submarine. I was like, oh, I should be nicer.
Well, occasionally people get very excited about birds. I've had people stop and they're like, shh, you know, I'm like, what's happening, you know, and he's like, there's a hawk, and then they'll show me like a hawk, you know, ripping a squirrel to pieces. It's a great way to bond with strangers, I think, over wildlife, because most people, no one's going to be like, I don't care about an eagle. Like, everyone's like, this is cool.
Right.
So yay for that. Oh, and I came across a deer carcass in Wickham Park. at the edge of Wickham Park where nobody goes.
Isn't Wickham Park closed?
Basically is for winter. You can kind of walk in, or there's a bike path along the side.
Oh, okay.
So you can, if you use the bike path, you can walk up a hill and find a deer carcass kind of in a swampy area that's been clearly ravaged by coyotes. And, you know, I was under the impression, because a friend had found this deer before, and so I was going back to, like, I knew the deer was there. This was me going to see a dead animal.
I went to see the deer carcass on purpose.
Yeah, well, I thought it was going to be, like, a skeleton.
You could just drive down the highway and see a deer carcass.
I thought it was going to be the skeleton, and it was not entirely at, like, a bleached-out skeleton phase. It was gross. So I was not ready for that.
I have seen a lot of deer this winter, like, more than usual, now that you mention it. Like, perfectly well and alive, like, kind of poking out at the side of the road. Like, should I cross? And then, thankfully, they've gone back. But I wonder if that's something to do with it being warmer or something.
I don't know. I think this one was just taken by coyotes.
Yeah.
Because it was... Not to be too graphic, but some of its parts were moved around. So it was not in the condition I was expecting. And it was a much more horrifying thing than I was imagining.
Too bad that didn't happen before our last episode about wildlife.
I know. Yeah, so maybe vineyards work in the winter. We still have to figure that out at
some
point.
Yeah, we definitely have to go because there is a winter wine trail. And we have talked about the regular wine trail before several times. Mm-hmm. And we should get around to the winter too,
which I think it's not like winter's that long, but I think for the winter wine trail passport portion of the program, I think it goes from only January to April or something.
Yeah, see, personally,
that's a lot of pressure.
I don't drink that much. Thing, right? I did it once, and I don't like the pressure that comes with it, because then you just realize, you know, I mean, I go to, like, whatever, 6 wineries in a season, and I'm like, whoa, that's a lot of, I left the house a lot, you know? But then you see people, like, trying to get all of them, and it's just, I don't
and
need
I
to
like,
participate in that.
I like completion, but I was thinking about that before, like, last time we were supposed to get together, and I'm like, could I try that? No, realistically, I would hit, like, the 2 that we were going to stop at, and then maybe 1 other,
right.
And that's all.
Right,
so,
and then
I'd feel disappointed in myself
right.
for, I guess, not prioritizing alcohol consumption at reasonable levels. So there we go. So what else is new?
Not too much else. I went to Philadelphia last week. It was very, very cold. It was like, I looked at the weather and it said, feels like 14. And then I looked at the weather for back home and it said, like, feels like 8 or something. So I guess it could have been worse, but it was cold. And yeah, that's pretty much it. I feel like it's January 20th now, and I feel like this year has gone by super fast.
Have you done any shopping this winter? Any places that I should know about?
I haven't really shopped for myself, but I've been sort of thinking about shopping in winter a lot, because I wrote a blog post about, I keep like plugging my own blog post, but you know, go to my blog, we'll put a link. I wrote a blog post about home shopping and
shopping for things for inside
for
the house
for
versus
home.
Shopping for a house,
right? Yeah. Yes, not like house hunting, but but shopping for home furnishings and so on. And I also when was it? A month ago, maybe, was on Star 99.9, Anna and Raven. I've been on there a couple times, and I was talking about things to do with kids, which was fun, since, like, I don't have kids, so people don't often ask me to talk about things to do with kids, but, like, I'm a pretty childish adult, so I can come up with them quite easily. But one of my things to do was, there's a certain type of shopping, like, in the winter, you know, and this is more so for December, like, you usually have to shop, but if you need things and there's this temptation to go to the mall because it's indoors,
mm-hmm.
but it's like so soul sucking in there.
Mm-hmm.
So I was talking about Old Milpund Village in Granby.
Oh yeah.
And how that's like a good kind of winter shopping. And I think the same would be true for, you know, like the Velvet Mill in Stonington, which is all indoors, or even like if you do need the mall stores, like Evergreen Walk.
Yeah.
South Windsor or Manchester? Because you can walk outside. Like, the thing about Old Mill Pond Village in Granby is, like, you get outside. You're not trapped in a mall. but you walk like 20 feet in between stores and then you're back inside and it's like super cozy. As far as malls go, that and Clinton Crossing are probably the ones that don't make me want to hang myself.
Although I have, I would say both a mall recommendation that blends with like a thing to do with kids.
Oh yeah.
So when I was mentoring a tween, I guess you would call her. I hate that word, but you know, neither of us were in the position to spend money, and we were, and it was a really cold day. We went over to, I guess, West Farms, and we just, her idea, sampled everything that there was to sample. So it wasn't really shopping, but it was seeing like all the different smells in the bath stores and the, and she had lots of comments about, she did not approve of a lot of them. You know, let's drink all the teas we are allowed to sample, eat everything that we're allowed. And that was actually kind of fun because we both went into it knowing that there was no money that was going to be spent. Is it even allowed for us to do this? And it felt like getting away with something to just go
through.
That's
funny. I had a friend in high school whose parents would do that. They would go to like, there was this very fancy little department store in my town, and on, I don't know, the weakest Saturday or whatever, they would do like a, I guess like an open house kind of day where they'd have food. I don't know. I barely ever went there because it was like quite high end, but I guess they would have like bagels and coffee or something for free for shoppers, and they would go there like just for that. And they would go to, you know, like the high end grocery store and things like that just for the free samples. They like, they tried to be like really posh, but like they did the trashiest things. But I think that's totally different from like going around to stores and smelling the things you can smell and like, you know, like that's cute. And it's like, if you have to be in the mall, that's like more fun than.
Well, and it also works well for like, especially with kids who are more like into the sensory stuff versus if that's going to overstimulate somebody who would do it. And what we both learned from that experience is that if a bath product is kind of powdery, smell it from afar. Because otherwise you have, was it baking powder, whatever that stuff, talc?
Yeah.
Or whatever that is, like going straight
in
up your nose.
Face, right.
I was not the one who learned that lesson because I kind of already knew that lesson, but I didn't stop her in time.
That's cute.
Yeah, so now she knows, don't smell the bath bombs at close range.
That's funny. I feel like our things are so much more, are so, like, not standard. We're like, go shopping, go snowshoeing, go see the dead animal. Whereas everything else, like, we were just talking about this article on CT Visit about things to do in Connecticut in the winter. Mm. And those are, I think, much more typical.
Yeah. So I think the first thing, when I read through that, I guess the first thing I noticed was that most of the towns that were on the list, I don't have any familiarity with most of them, so I was like, well, I don't know if that's what you do in Westport.
Yeah, that, well, Westport is always just funny to me. I think you can just never read about, like, the town where you grew up and not find it, like, bizarre that anyone would go there on purpose. I really like this writer. I should say she's written books that I quite like about New England driving and stuff, and she writes for Yankee, and she's like very legit and knows what she's doing. So she wrote this, and it's like exactly what, you know, people want to read. So if I'm mocking it, it's like I'm not mocking her at all. Like
it's coming from
it's
a place
very
of love.
Well done. Yeah,
but it's also it's not terrible for the places I knew. I was like, okay, I can see that.
It's funny because, like, you know, Westport, it says Earth Place, which I believe is what the Nature Center has like glowed up into. And when I was little, my dad used to take me to the Nature Center all the time. I freaking loved it. But my mom said when I was an adult, she said I hated that place. It's so gross. It's like, there's like three animals and they're like dead, like, you know, taxidermy. And like, it was miserable. So that was funny. And then the Inn at Longshore, and that's like, that's where, oh, you know, remember the story about the bullfrog thing?
Yeah.
That's where that happened at the golf course at Longshore. So, like, you could go to the pool there in the summer if you weren't a member. So, like, I would go there. And, yeah, lots of like, memories of Longshore, even though we weren't members. But that's kind of funny. And what else was there? The Madison suggestions were pretty good, I thought.
Yeah,
letting
people
there.
Know that winter is when you can bring your dog.
Right,
and you know, which is relevant
store.
To people who have dogs.
Yeah, yes. The like the combination of, like, beach and bookstore I liked. And I think there was a wine store in there, which I didn't know, but, like, I'm always in favor of a wine store.
Right.
And Litchfield, I think, in general, and, like, the downtown, and she mentioned White Memorial Conservation Center, I think is the full name of it, which is gorgeous. Litchfield, I generally do think of as, like, a winter... It's just so pretty in the winter. It's like all the buildings are white anyway, so it's just like very sparkly.
I would not have thought of Norwich as a winter place, but also, and I think I've talked about this, how I would have anxiety dreams that always ended up with me getting lost and landing in Norwich.
Oh, really?
So a reader of my blog had contacted me saying, you know, originally he was from Norwich and he wants, you know, I asked people like, what do you want to know more about? What should I cover this year? And he wanted to know Norwich. So I'm like, I think I've been assigned to go and tackle my fear. So I saw that Yantic Falls, Indian Leap, whatever that's called, Uncas Falls. Yeah. I've heard it called Uncas Leap. I've heard it called a few different things. That was actually on my list. So, and pictures of that when they're icy, I was like, yeah, that's a thing I would do. That's
it's
cool.
I really love Yantic Falls. That's like a really great place to go. I was sort of surprised to see it on this list. Like, I personally like it better in the summer. Slater Memorial Museum is in Norwich, and it's great. And they have, like, really cool architecture, so I guess that's good any time of year. But, yeah, I didn't think of that. And Middletown as well, I wouldn't think of as, like, a winter. I drove through it the other day, and I love Middletown. I think it's so pretty, and it looks really sad to me. It just looked cold, and, like, that really wide Main Street, I was like, no, I don't want to walk all the way across there.
I 100% agree with Woodstock and Pomfret, but I felt like they were thrown into the same category, right? Like, didn't it say...
Oh, were they? Was it, like...
I think it said Woodstock, but then there was mention of Pomfret, and I'm like, but that's not in Woodstock. Why aren't you, like, your own thing?
Right.
Which is just me being weird about classification.
That's true, me too. And that's where we were going to go,
right,
to the vineyard. So, yeah, definitely, like... that whole area.
In the Audubon Society, I wrote something about winter, like, the first day walks, and thinking, yeah, the Audubon Society, you know, I went there Thanksgiving, the day after Thanksgiving. It wasn't snowy yet. It would have been even prettier. But it was beautiful. Like, it's desolate. You're probably not going to see as many birds, but it's very, very peaceful out there.
Yeah.
So 100% on that one.
You know what's really pretty up in that area in the winter is Thompson, because there's almost nothing there. It's just very pristine, like the old town green. And it's like kind of looks just really unchanged. And it has, like, there's a post office, and I don't even know if there's any businesses really in the whole area.
Was there anything else on that list? I mean, I think it's not bad.
No, it's not bad. It also had a lot of, like, cozy, romantic stuff, I guess.
Mm. Do they have these, like, the romantic cozy getaways, but just for single? Like, but for you, not to go and, like, cruise, but just to go by yourself. Like, maybe you have a partner, but your partner isn't into that.
Right.
And you're like, I just want to have my own, like, fireplace snuggle night with me and a book.
Yeah, that I feel like that doesn't exist. I feel like the closest thing to that would be something like a yoga retreat.
Yeah, that's what I've been
thinking about.
Yeah, so I think someone should get on that and make some money.
And it would be really awkward to go... I'm sure there are places where you could do it, but I've never seen anyone evaluate, like, hotels or inns or something on that criteria. Like, what would be a comfortable place to go if you just want to be alone in a room and not have everything? Like, obviously, if you're paying for it, you could do it, but it would be so weird if everything was all, like, this massive, like, bed and, like, hearts and champagne and stuff, and you're just like, oh, I am alone.
Like, I'm here for my introvert retreat, and I want my salmon now.
Well, there could be a market in that, or even, like, moms who need to get away from their family for, like, a weekend.
Absolutely. I've tried to send friends to, like, go, take a couple days. Like,
yeah,
they'll survive, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Maybe, I mean, I don't know. I don't have kids. I can't guarantee that, but they'll probably survive, and you'll be better off for it, you know? So, yeah, somebody needs to really get on.
Yeah, that would be a good marketing... You
and know. Just not necessarily involve yoga. Like, yoga could be optional, but it's not central to it, because some of us are yoga dropouts.
Well, I feel like those things for, like, single, or not even single, but, like, lone people, whether it's women or men, they always kind of involve self-improvement in some way.
Right. And, like, I'm plenty.
Like, I'm fine. Couples don't need to improve themselves. Like, why do we need to, like, can't we just go and have the fireplace and the wine, too?
And, like, realistically, I'm not fine and probably could use improvement, but I'm also lazy and I'm not going to. Like, I'm just, it's okay. I'm fine with myself, but I would like boozy hot chocolate and... I don't know, maybe a foot massage.
No, I think if you're single, you're supposed to just, like, do that alone in your house and, like, feel sorry for yourself.
Watch Friends reruns.
Oh, God, no. So, that actually, like, sort of segues unexpectedly nicely into, like, how regional travel is portrayed, like New England travel, the sort of romanticized image of, like, and I base everything on Instagram because I'm on that app all day, but, like, I feel like in the winter, the New England travel plan is you go to New Hampshire where it's really snowy and cozy, or maybe Vermont.
There are Clydesdale horses somewhere.
Probably, yeah. Or you just go, like, you go to Charleston, where yesterday I saw someone say on Instagram it was like 80 degrees or something and I wanted to kill people. Or you go to, you know, Aruba or wherever.
Yeah, and no in between.
No in between. No acknowledgement of, you know, the parts of New England or even the parts of just the eastern seaboard that are winter and maybe snowy, but not quite so...
mountainous.
Norman Rockwell and mountain, yes. Not quite so, like, skiing and Instagram.
Probably because it's easy to get a picture at those other places. And this, like, I'm looking around this park, which is, you know, not my neighborhood park, but it's in Hartford, and it's, I'm very familiar with it, and, you know, you'd have to do some creative cropping and stuff to...
Yeah, we
get
have
a picture.
The Colt Dome in the distance, but it's far in the distance.
There's a Colt monument up there. I mean, there's a family playing on the playscape with snow on the ground, and previously they were nailing each other with giant snowballs, like the size of a snowman's head. So there's winter activities happening all around us, but they're not really, like, postcard perfect, I guess.
No, they're not, like...
Well, and there's, like, is the incinerator running? Because sometimes you can see the smoke from the incinerator down here. And that really ruins it. Maybe it's off right now. Hard to tell. It's pretty... Oh, no, it's on. There it is. Way down there. But blends with the clouds. So, yeah.
Hartford has it.
Hartford has it. And also, all what was it, 69 other towns trash.
That's why there are those accounts that just post, like, autumn and winter all year.
I know.
Long, which is weird to me, but okay.
And they're usually oversaturated because leaves aren't usually that... right.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys. I'm on to you. So I guess this isn't really a winter New England thing, but we were going to talk about, I guess, just some, like, language and culture, or cultural barriers or, like, missteps, things that we've tripped over. And something that I guess, you know, maybe doesn't get portrayed as New England, but parts of Hartford have a very strong Hispanic culture or cultures, and including my neighborhood. And by the way, you can't just absorb language magically. Like, you have to practice it. Unfortunately, I assume, like, maybe after 10 years, I will have absorbed another language fully. And I know a little bit of Spanish. And so I've had, like, the weirdness of going into a place a block from my house and, you know, slowly interpreting the menu, because I can do it. It takes a little bit. And by the time, I was trying to order, it was just so slow that they went to pull the dishwasher who could speak English. And I was just, like, I was so mortified by it. I was like, oh my gosh, but I'm trying. So that was several years ago, but the other day I actually got to almost reverse that because I went into a Peruvian restaurant and ordered in Spanish. And I got without repeating my order, I got exactly what I had ordered. Yay. And I felt like I had just, like, hit a very, very small milestone in my own backyard.
I feel like learning a language is one thing, but then when you have to actually speak it to people and be understood, it's, like, a whole other ballgame.
Right. And I can, swear at people in Spanish very quickly. It's like second language, like knee jerk. I don't need to think about it, but anything else where I'm like, I need to impress somebody versus yell at them in the street, it takes a lot longer. The other side of things though, so Trinity College is basically in my neighborhood, and I hadn't noticed this before that, I mean, I've noticed the cannons up there, on top of the hill pointed at Hartford, and I hadn't read the plaque before, or hadn't read it carefully. And they have a plaque that is basically dedicated to soldiers on both sides of the Civil War. Like, to those, like, their students who have been that, or, like, descended from, something to that effect. And it really, it felt really strange.
Maybe culturally. I don't actually read the text of enough Civil War monuments, but I'm surprised that it says that.
It felt so cheap. I was like, we're playing to both sides for, like, tuition money? What does that, how do I take that?
What year was that put up, do you know?
I don't know, but it's just, I've gone by the cannons, like, uncountable times. Like, Cine Studios up there, like, many, many times during the year have passed this, and I know I've read it at some other point, but it didn't sink in.
That's like something recently. That should be in, I don't know, Maryland or maybe Missouri, one of those states that was on both sides of the
right.
Civil War.
Yeah, and so that's like my other, when I was thinking about this topic, I'm like, well, cultural barriers, I have trouble with a lot of like the Southern culture stuff that has stuck, that, you know, where you'll find Confederate soldiers' names as like street names and stuff, or like someplace that I looked up recently in Indiana had like General E. Lee Day Street or Boulevard or something. I was like, what is this world? Why are you celebrating this? That's ridiculous. And I have trouble. Like, I know we're supposed to be very accepting of all these different cultures, but I'm like, I don't know about that.
Yeah, that's a hard one to be. It's hard to be accepting of a culture that's built around unacceptance. That's not a word, is it? But intolerance. There we go.
Right. So you said that you are trying to learn or relearn a language.
Yeah, I'm trying to study Hebrew again. First time with a phone app. I've studied it in Israel in an Ulpan, which is basically like the Israeli method of immersion teaching, I guess, which is like how immigrants learn when they move to Israel. And I've also studied it a couple times in New York with teachers trained in that same method, but at like, you know, just like a class once a week kind of situation. And I forgot most of it, because I'm pretty good at learning languages and terrible at remembering them. So I've been trying to teach myself with Pimsleur, which is like a very weird experience. At least I can practice my accent. But now I started the thing and I'm paying for it, so I'm determined to finish it, even though I'm like, what am I getting out of this?
So how long were you in Israel for?
I was I was there for something like 4 to 5 months.
Okay, so that's a while.
Yeah.
And like, how did you do, so you said it was immersion, so how were you doing with it then?
I was doing pretty well in class. It was like, all day classes pretty much, not every day, but several days of the week. And I was less good at it actually getting out and talking to people in real life, because like that just takes a lot more confidence to me. But and they all speak English pretty much anyway, almost. Right. So, but yeah, I was pretty good at learning it. I was much better at speaking than writing. I still find writing and reading Hebrew to be difficult, which is funny because I took Greek once. Like an intensive summer thing, and I learned, they sent you the alphabet to learn like before class started so you could show up and know it, and I taught myself that in, you know, half an hour. But Hebrew, which is like my own ancestral language, I like struggle to read.
Well, and it's hard because the language has vowels, but there are not vowel,
right, there are not vowels written typically, right. And there's a system of writing them, which is like, I think I've heard it called like training wheels for language, like like new immigrants, kind of like there are some things published like that, but it's you know, ultimately they're not going to be there. And it's true that you don't need them. Like if you read a page of English with the vowels removed, you could sound it out and figure by context, but yeah, it's hard.
Yeah.
And it goes backwards. I wish I had learned it when I was really young. I wish that's one thing, like if by some miracle I have a child, like, they're getting taught Hebrew young,
mm-hmm.
you know, because yeah. it is definitely harder to learn as an adult. And I don't, I mean, I know that it's harder in terms of your brain, but I think it's also harder just because you have so many obligations and you have to
mm-hmm.
force yourself to sit there with that app for half an hour, you know?
And realistically, like here, who are you going to practice with on a daily basis?
Right.
Unless, I mean, I guess if you're like in West Hartford and going to a synagogue every day, there you go, but that's, you're not doing that, so.
Yeah. And I'm not, like, social enough to be seeking out random strangers to be talking to either, so. But going back to the thing you said about Spanish, I think that's something that people don't realize about New England because of, I'm like melding all our topics mm-hmm. together here, because awesome. Of how it's sort of romanticized when it's depicted, that it's like very homogeneous.
Uh-huh.
And it's totally not.
Right.
And I wonder, I don't know, sometimes I think, do people come here and like, they're shocked that everyone's not white?
I think so. I was at an event recently where there were people who were all very lovely and they had left Brooklyn at some point to live in the suburbs of Connecticut, and they were talking about how much they miss guava pastries. I'm like, I can get those within a block of my house. And they're like, for real? I'm like, yeah, go to Park Street. Just walk down the street and go into random bakeries until you find them. Trust me, they are there.
Yeah.
I think that it speaks to a lot of the segregation that we have.
Yeah.
But yeah, absolutely. We have other cultures here. And they don't all feature Clydesdales and the inns and everything else. What prompted you to relearn Hebrew? What is there? Are you planning a trip or do you just feel like you want to know it?
Partly because I always have six reasons why I do anything, but
awesome.
Partly because I just feel really embarrassed knowing only one language fluently. I just feel like that's not, you know, I want to be able to speak another one. Secondly, I loved learning that language, and it kind of makes sense to me naturally to learn the language that's like your, you know, of your mm-hmm. own culture. Like, I took French in high school, but I don't have any desire. Of course, it would be lovely to magically know French again, but I, you know, I'm not going. Realistically, if I end up living in another country, it would be Israel. So that's just a practical mm-hmm. thing, too. You know, who knows what's going to happen to America
that's
these days.
Correct.
So
you don't know.
It's always good to have a backup plan. And, yeah, I just, I also love a lot of Israeli you know, movies and TV and media and stuff like that, mm. and music. It would just be nice to be able to understand. And you also don't magically learn languages by watching TV as much as people say
right.
that you do. I don't understand those people.
Right. I think listening to music, I would be more likely to, because I'm, like, musical, and I realized I was listening to some Israeli pop.
Mm-hmm.
And I went and I actually eventually just looked up the lyrics mm-hmm. because I'm like, I know what I'm singing is completely wrong. And I'm just making up, like, anglicizing things. I'm like, that's not what they're saying, but it fits. And I'm like, oh, okay, this makes more sense now. I don't think I could learn the entire language that way.
Yeah.
But it, like,
you
I
do
think it's a good way to
words
pick stuff
that
up.
Way. Yeah, yeah, that's true.
Sing boy band music in multiple languages.
But I wonder what would happen if you did, like, Pimsleur, or there's probably better mm. apps for Spanish, probably a lot yeah. better apps. But if you started some Spanish, like, being around it in your neighborhood, you'd probably,
right.
like, pick it up faster.
Yeah. And also, I mean, with Spanish, and I'm sure with many languages, it matters. There are so many variations of it with accents and so
yeah.
forth. So, like, in the Peruvian restaurant, Peruvian Spanish and, like, Puerto Rican Spanish are a bit different, in my understanding. Like,
mm-hmm.
one is spoken much more quickly,
mm-hmm.
and that I have trouble with because I, you know, even with English, I'm a slow listener. I don't know if that's, like, a phrase that makes sense to anybody. But,
well, that's also true.
Yeah.
Like, even in English, I have the most awkward conversations, like, with two native English speakers, Americans, like, I can just be so completely awkward, then, like, if you add something else to that mix, like, oh my god.
Mm-hmm. I guess this isn't language, at all. Well, it can be language, but I guess the last thing I was thinking about with the cultural differences is, like, I didn't grow up in New York, but I feel sometimes, like, this missing a hometown, like, a few weeks ago, I was really missing Brooklyn. Not like I lived there, but I've spent enough time and I'm like, I really miss it. And I think part of that is I feel very much at home in certain parts of the culture there.
Mm-hmm.
Largely the rudeness and the shoving of people around subways. And when you go from that back to a place where, like, you're really, it's fairly frowned upon to, like, elbow people, like, to get onto a bus. And I don't think it's not nice behavior. And I'm not saying that that's good, but I know that I feel really comfortable with that.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you know, if someone's not in line the right way, yelling at them to do that, like, I feel like it's acceptable in, like, New York and Boston to do that. And here it's like, be nice, be patient. I don't know if you've noticed that or if this is just all in my head, but...
Yeah, no, well, New York is, like, very comfortable to me because it's the place where the external surroundings kind of match, like, the pace of my head. Whereas, mm-hmm. like, in other places in America, I have to, like, kind of slow myself down or else I'll get ahead of myself and ahead of other people. Mm-hmm. In New York, it's like that all kind of aligns. Mm-hmm. And that is where I spent, well, part of the first part of my childhood, not that I remember it, and, you know, where my parents lived for quite a long time before having me, and where I went to college and lived, like, in my early 20s. So I think there's a lot of kind of formative experiences in that culture. But I was just reading something about how apparently people, Jewish people from all over the country, like, they meet other people and those people think they're from New York, even if they're totally not from New York at all.
I just so randomly, but I found out the other day that apparently the frozen bagel was invented in Connecticut.
Yes. And there's
I don't know how it took me this long to figure that out.
No, there's a whole story about it, which of course I forget now, but it's really interesting because, like, it's such a, I mean, it's like such a travesty, the frozen bagel, and you just mock it. But it really comes from a good place.
It really is, but it's basically what I ate growing up. And I didn't realize, like, it was maybe the 50s when it was invented, and, you know, I was like, well, it's, as long as I've been around, it's existed. I never thought about the origins of it. I guess it was, I don't know, making dough in advance and having it frozen so that, like, later on in the week,
I think there was actually, we're going to have to look this up and put it in the show notes, because it's a really interesting story, and I just learned it a few years ago and was really surprised, but I think the people behind it kind of wanted to bring that ethnic food to the masses, mm-hmm. but it ended up being, like, this thing that everyone makes fun of, because it's, like, frozen bread. It's, I mean, whatever, it's fine, it's bread, it's handy, but it's not a bagel, you know? That's funny.
Yeah.
Connecticut.
I know.
All roads lead back to Connecticut.
You find great articles. And I end up, like, looking at news sites and reading about horrible stories and stuff. And you're like, here's something from the New York Times about 52 places we should go.
I read the horrible stories too, but...
Yeah. And so there's 52 places to go in 2020. Obviously, well, I'm hoping they don't expect people to go to all of those, because that would be one really expensive trip after another.
No, only
so
the...
I guess not.
They have the 52 places reporter. I guess they've done this for, like, 2 or 3 years. I remember when they started it. And I thought it was the coolest thing ever. And, like, my friend told me I should apply, so I did. And they didn't pick me. Spoiler. But they always end up edited in that New York Times travel section style that makes every place sound as boring as possible. And it makes me feel better that I can't go to all these places.
Some of them... So my big takeaway from this list, and I didn't read every word of every last entry, but mm-hmm. I read a lot of them. And so the theme... One of the themes seemed to be, see this now because the earth is on fire and this attraction won't be here that much longer.
Right. Those were the only, there were, most of them, as with, usually with their 52 places, most of them did not appeal to me. Mm-hmm. I'd only been to two of them, and two of them were already on my list. But the other ones, you know, none of them I would have not given the rest of them really a second thought, except I did read a few that were environmentally based, and that did make me want to see those places, because it was very much see this because it could be gone. The rest of them were picked, you know, like, travel stories are usually based on timeliness, which I just hate. I could go on a rant. I probably have before. But, you know, go to this place because 3 new restaurants are opening there. Mm-hmm. Like, seriously? Why would I care?
Right. So one of the I think it was the first one on the list, maybe, was D.C. And it was because of suffrage, like the
anniversary.
But I couldn't figure out, like, what the DC angle specifically was with suffrage. And, you know,
angle is they're trying to make it timely.
Yeah, and
for 2020, and it's annoying.
At a historical society, and I'm fairly aware of, like, there are plenty of events locally that might be just as engaging as whatever they have going on in D.C.
But so you should go to D.C. because D.C. is a great city.
It's great. I was just well, that's a weird reason to give. Unless they're, like, naming a place that, you know, I guess if they said, but also this display, this exhibit is only going to be open for the first 6 months of 2020 and gave us details that were really compelling, that would have been different. But I was like, well, okay. Suffrage.
Yeah, like, it doesn't, you know, that's not how I travel, at least. No. I thought one of the places on there that I wanted to go for ages was Glacier National Park. But yeah. In a typically tone-deaf touch, they said you should also go to Whitefish, Montana, which over the past few years has distinguished itself for, you know, neo-Nazis.
Right.
Like, thank you, no.
No.
Still absolutely want to go to Glacier. Loved Montana, such a beautiful state. Do not want to go to Whitefish.
Mm-hmm. Paris, I'd love to go to Paris, but the entry wasn't particularly compelling for me either, just because of it was like food. I'm like,
oh, okay.
Okay, yeah, obviously, like, I know the food is why I would, is a big factor, but what else happens there that we don't already know about? I'd say Krakow, Poland was a place I had not thought about, and their angle was that it was terribly polluted, and they've been turning it around because they've banned coal and wood burning. And I was like, oh, this is exciting. And if you just skim the list without thinking too hard, it looked really impressive. They're like, there's a fleet of electric buses, but then it was like for one part of the city. Like, okay. And parks, like, okay, so I'm happy for them,
right,
but
good
I'm not
for them, but like feeling... I'm supposed to travel to Europe for that.
Right. Versus like Copenhagen, which is monumental in like so many ways when you think about sustainability. So,
yeah, I feel like if you were a sustainability tourist, is that even a thing? You wouldn't pick like that one neighborhood in Krakow. I don't
know. Right. And I'd also be like, at this point, I'm like, I don't know, I'd have to do like a boat trip like Greta. And I don't have that kind of time off right now. So some of these things, that's just like, yeah, maybe somewhere down the road, not 2020 for me.
Yeah. The other one in the environmental vein was like some barrier islander in Louisiana.
Yes, I had that one written down. It was a see it before it's gone. But they also have a migration bird festival, which sounded kind of cool.
That entry sort of made me want to go to that place. Mm-hmm. I think Louisiana, it's fascinating anyway, just how so much of it seems like water more than land almost when you're in the coastal regions of Louisiana. And I, you know, I haven't been to like the really outlying parts like that. So that, and Australia too, they highlighted like, I forget which region of Australia they picked. I was going to print the thing out, but it said 109 pieces of paper. And I said, no. So yeah, somewhere in Australia, because watching that is just like devastating to think about.
And I have been reading a lot of stuff about that for work. And I have friends who live in Australia, and they had been on Kangaroo Island the night like that some second wave of fires got started with a lightning strike. So it was like a whole, I think, an adventure that they did not sign on for. Mm-hmm. But luckily they made it out fine.
I feel like it's not an Australia only
correct
thing. So it's like you can't even watch it and feel bad for them from a distance. It's like, yeah, we're all going to be screwed somehow.
And the Amazon, and California. And every time I turn around, I think, well, maybe I'll go to this place that, like, burns down to the ground. So, Mongolia and Tajikistan, I'm not even sure I'm saying that right. Those were on the list as, like, here's some wild off-the-grid places to go to.
I feel like Mongolia has been sort of, maybe not quite trendy, but, like, Mongolia has definitely been a travel thing for a while.
I think one of them, and I forget which one, I didn't write it down, but one of them, it, you know, is maybe getting an airport connection, so they're stepping it up, I guess. I think both of those would be really interesting to me to visit at some point, but I wouldn't just go there. Like, any of these places, I have too much environmental guilt to just, like, go get on a plane and go to Copenhagen. If I'm going to do that, like, I probably would fly, but I would also be making...
Yeah, that's ironic too, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, these places are going to be destroyed. Go see them.
Do your share in destroying them.
Right.
I would have to make it much more than just, like, I'm going to go there for a few days. I'd want to take trains to different places and really make it worth, you know, whatever I just did to the planet.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting, yeah. too, because the New York Times is, like, very much not known for, like, bold dances on issues, but one could change this to, you know, go to 52 places that are very close to your home because the carbon emissions otherwise are too damaging, which, yeah. you know, I'm not going to, if I could go to a bunch of places abroad, I definitely would. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not going to even pretend that I am not sitting here with my plastic water bottle right now, but, like, it's just interesting that there, so many of them were environmentally themed, and yet they're like, hop on a plane and go 2,000 miles away.
The one thing that I was, like, feeling pretty good about, though, was Western Sweden, which I didn't know is Western Sweden a region. I guess they're marketing it as such. They have a 44-mile-long walking trail, and it has train stations along it. So you can, once you're there, I mean, you know, however you're getting there, you can hop on a train to go somewhere else. And I like that idea that they actually thought about that for that part. So I'm like, in my mind, I'm thinking, how do we connect this visit Western Sweden, visit Copenhagen, like link these things so that you can, like, let's focus on this area. If you're going to go somewhere, do this regional travel so you're not being as wasteful. Yeah. And honestly, of the things on the list, like, I've been to DC, so I don't know that I'm going to go back anytime soon, but yeah, like, figure out, how do I get to Louisiana by train? I'd be okay with that. I haven't been to Louisiana, and everyone I've ever met who's been there is like, you would love it. And enough different people have said that to me that I'm starting to think, like, maybe they're onto something. Maybe I would love it.
Yeah, I think you'd like New Orleans.
Yeah, there's, like, a lot of history there, and I don't know that they sold it that much. Like, any of these places, except for the DC mention of suffrage, I didn't get the feel that anyone's like, for this kind of, if you're really into historical nerdy stuff, go visit this.
Right, see, I feel like they'll rarely write that because it's not timely. Unless it's an anniversary of something.
Mm-hmm.
But something like a history museum is always going to be there.
Right.
Unless the town burns down, which could totally happen, right? But yeah, they're not going to tell you about that, which kind of makes it lame. But I guess it's always nice to just think of places you want to go. It's inspiration.
Yeah.
At best, you know. The other one I've been to is Richmond.
Okay, yeah. I thought I saw Richmond on your list there. I've been there as well, but with family, so I haven't really explored it like I want to.
Yeah, I've been there a couple times and, I don't know, two or three times, and whenever I've been there, I really liked it. It's very nice city, and I don't remember why they said to go now, but
I don't either.
It was not a compelling reason.
I felt bad, partly because I noted maybe I should go there, but that was mostly thinking I have a cousin there and aunt, and maybe I should go to Richmond and visit them. And I, yeah, kind of skipped over that, but there was nothing that clearly stood out to me.
Yeah.
So what didn't make their list? Like, if you were to add on to it, if you're like, here's something that really could happen for this year, what would you put on?
Like realistically?
Maybe.
I guess my top, I have sort of, in theory, a huge list of places I'd like to go, but I still really want to do, I know we talked about this before, the trip where I do the last four, I think it's four more states that I haven't been to in the U.S., and I would really like to do that, which is Texas, Oklahoma, Wyoming, and I think I was including Kansas in that list, although I have technically been there, but I haven't really ever, you know, been to anything there. So I would love to do that. And if I had to pick, aside from wanting to go back to Israel, as always, I've wanted to go to Greece since, like, you know, I was in high school, and I just never have done it, but I would love to do, like, a really big... The thing with Greece is that I've studied and read so much about the history that I wouldn't be content with, like, a week vacation or whatever you would do. It would have to be, like, quite a long trip. Mm-hmm. So a lot of prep and a lot of savings. But yeah, that would be, like, my ultimate sort of out-of-the-country big trip right now that I would like to do. And then I have, you know, 300 other places.
I've found that as I've done some more genealogy stuff and I don't know, maybe it's just, like, time of my life, or I've gotten boring in this way, but I'm like, you know, it wouldn't be bad at some point to visit the places where I know I have family that came from, but then I'm like, what's the point? It's not like these are people I've ever met. I don't really have that kind of connection, but I'm curious when I found out, like, whatever cities that were the ports that they left from. I'm like, I'd like to see what that place looked like. Like, where was, you know, what view did they have when they were getting on this boat?
Yeah, that's an interesting, yeah, and obviously that's, like, a huge thing. That's, that kind of travel is, like, further down on my list, but I would, of course I would, like, love to go to those places, too. Right now I can't, thanks Donald Trump. Would not want to be an American in, like, Russia/Ukraine at the moment.
Well, yeah, that's the problem, is every time I start thinking of those ideas, I'm like, okay, when will I get a window to visit Russia where, like, I'll almost feel like I've gotten to that point. I'm like, oh, no, never mind. It got weird again. Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
One of the, we were talking earlier about the cultural barriers and weirdness, and kind of where that came from was me thinking about all the stuff that's been happening in the last few weeks, like the various hate crimes, and if that's impacted any of your thoughts about traveling, like, in, like, the tri-state area, really.
I mean, I feel like anything like that, it would kind of have to be, or at least I think of it on sort of a case-by-case basis, you know, like, I was thinking when you're talking about how they said to go to Paris, like, I was almost thinking, like, well, you could get French food in New York and you're not going to get beaten up in the street. And then I thought, oh, no, wait, you will. No,
yeah, you can.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, if you're, like, very identifiably, stereotypically Jewish looking in a certain street, yeah.
Right. And this is, like, a topic for, like, a whole other podcast that's not our podcast. But, like, I feel like it's only a matter of time before racists learn to actually identify Jews who do not advertise it by wearing certain clothes. Because, like, ultimately that kind of attack is not about the theology of what the Orthodox believe. It's about who Jews are. It's just that those particular individuals are identifiable.
If you're going to be hateful, do some legwork.
Yeah, and it's actually, like, our memory of history is super short, but, you know, it's interesting that I think it's important to remember that before the Pittsburgh attacks, the worst anti-Semitic attacks in America were not carried out at religious institutions. There was the Jewish Community Center, you know, which is basically a gym. There was a preschool. There was the Holocaust Museum shooting. Like, these are not synagogues. And I think people reporting these events get confused sometimes, and they think it's a religious issue, and it's about, like, someone's religion, so if they change how they practice, then they'll be okay.
Right.
But it's not about that.
No.
The Orthodox are just noticeable.
Right.
So.
And going to a kosher deli.
Right. Exactly. Like, a kosher deli, like, aside from how we talk about food, a kosher deli is not a place of worship.
No.
I understand if you're confused. But it's not. It's a very secular space.
And someone's going to, like, listen to this and be like, they are terrible for laughing about this. But, like, you have to laugh because it's that ridiculous.
Yeah. There's the ignorance reaches a level where, and we're getting, like, so off topic. If you're still listening, maybe you remember when Joe Lieberman was running for vice president and CNN and then other networks were doing stories like, what is a Jew? And, you know, honestly, we have not improved our knowledge as a country.
What year was that?
That was that was, like, the run-up. It was the 2000 election.
Yeah.
And that's basically still, like, the level at which reporting is being done. And, like, it's a little more urgent now. So you'd think you'd hope it would be better, but it's not better. And so, of course, that impacts travel. I don't have any desire to go to Europe. And it's not because I think I wouldn't be safe. It's because I don't necessarily want to give my money and energy to, ultimately, governments that can't protect their Jewish population. If you could travel everywhere, then it might matter less, but when you have to be selective, you start thinking about these things.
Yeah. So, let's see. We've been nearly buzzed by a few minivans here in the park. We had a scrapper truck just go by, and I thought, for sure, I know you're watching, I was, like, watching it intently because I thought it was going to hit us. Pothole and lose everything, but they made it through just fine. Expert level.
We've had some pedestrians go by.
Yeah.
The Snowball family is gone from the swing set.
No one is sledding, which I feel like is a missed opportunity.
But probably good, because we don't want them to hit the car.
No. So, and there's your update from Colt Park.
Right. Reporting live. Next time we will probably not do the podcast in a car, but you'll just have to come back and see.
There are a few Patreon supporters who we would like to thank. Allison, Anthony, Benjamin, Brian, Constanza, H.S., Margo Lynn, Mary, Matthew, Nancy, and Steve.
Your support helps going steady keep going steady. Thank you.
You can now listen to Going Steady on Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, and the Apple Podcasts app.
If you'd like to rate or review us over there, that would be a great help. You can also subscribe to Going Steady and receive notifications by email. Sign up at goingsteadyct.com. That's goingsteadyct.com. Comments, suggestions for future episodes, hit us up at goingsteadyct.com. ¶¶